Welcome, everybody. This is the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast number 25, recording this on 18th of May, 2012. I'm Steve Litchfield. I'm standing in for our resident host, Ewan Spencer, who is off at Eurovision duty. And in fact, if we patch this little cable into this socket here, we should be able to call him up live in Baku, where he's popped off for a couple of weeks of Eurovision parties. Ewan, are you there?
Hello, London. This is Baku calling. Hello, London.
Can we have the votes, please, for the All About Windows Phone application?
All About Windows Phone, 12 points.
Excellent.
All About Windows Phone, 12 points. That's a good start, isn't it? So how are you getting on over there, Ewan, with your Windows Phone? Presumably you've got the Lumia 800. Well, how are you doing for a SIM, and how's it getting on?
Well, first of all, this place is called the Land of Fire, and coming from Scotland, the daily temperature is here at 35 degrees Celsius. I am absolutely boiling. But we've got a lot of facilities placed on. As we stepped off the aircraft, we actually had Azercell, who are one of the local companies, and they were supplying all the visitors to the Eurovision Song Contest with a prepaid SIM, loaded up with the equivalent of €5, which gives us 500 meg of data. Top-up cards were €10 for 1 gig of data. So it's a walk in there, pick up the SIM card, sign a million forms, because it's a state here that loves its forms and loves its rules. And half an hour later, after finding a SIM cutter for the 800, thankfully some of us actually brought our SIM cutters along, sitting there on Azerbaijani's mobile phone network. Not a lot of 3G coverage, I have to say. We're mostly on the eGPS, eGSM, the stuff that works with the letter E, which is all Edge. Appropriate. Yes, there we go, Edge. I was also thinking it was E for Eurovision as well, but that's probably pushing it. So data speeds are a little bit down, but to be honest, they're kind of comparable to when you're stuck in like the big cities like London and Glasgow, when there's a lot of mobile phone traffic going around. The important thing, of course, is that it's kept me in touch. So even though it's quite a long distance away, I was able to text my wife and say, look, here we go. Here's my SMS. Send something back if you get it. So we've been able to have that SMS contact whenever we both need it. And that, you know, from a personal point of view, you know, it doesn't matter what the phone is. The fact that we have that is absolutely wonderful. It's very reassuring on both sides of things. The data speeds are down, which means that, you know, mapping software to download over the air using Nokia Maps does take a little bit of time. But, you know, we're not moving around a huge amount, and there's a huge amount of help from the local police forces who will direct the traffic round. Probably the best thing for me, of course, is being able to keep an eye on Facebook, being able to upload the pictures, to send them up and show everybody what's going on, because the sites here are absolutely wonderful. In terms of the 800 on the ground, it's pretty good. Obviously, I've got the Eurovision album loaded up, so we can listen back to the music and everything. There's HD video in there, so while we're watching the rehearsals, we can actually record the rehearsals and watch them out, because they stream live into the depression, but we can go into the stadium and actually see the water features that are being used by some acts. There's an old Cypriot stone park bench being used by another one, so we can get some video of those classic Eurovision moments. They're a week before they happen, all of them captured in the phone. And this is where something like Live Tiles comes in really useful, because it is so busy, it's so jam-packed here. You know, so much calls and texts and information coming in. It literally is phone on swipe. Look down, I can see email, I can see text, I can see missed phone calls. And also I can see the stats of my Eurovision website as well. They're updated every 30 minutes, thanks to the In The Know Google Analytics application. If we're having an application of the week, that's the one I would be choosing. But I don't know how long the voting circuit is going to stay open, so I'm going to mention it now.
Lovely. One challenge before you go, Ewan. Now, you've got the 800 there, and I reckon the 800's camera is not as bad as some pundits make out. It's got the same unit as the 900, of course. I've got a challenge
really
for you.
I'm really not the person to judge camera quality, Steve. You know that, don't you?
But this is part of the challenge. I am challenging you, the worst photographer in the world officially, to take the Lumia 800 and shoot some nice arty stage shots in the rehearsal. Just to shoot some nice shots of the stage lighting and the performers. See how good you can get. I appreciate you may need to take, you know, 30, 40 photographs to get 4 or 5 nice ones, but send us your nicest ones back. I like to prove to people that even with your skills and even in tricky lighting conditions in the hall there, that the Lumia 800 camera can take some decent stills. So there's a challenge for you.
Well, in that case, Steve, do you have any tips?
Tips are keep the camera still. So if you haven't got a tripod, rest it on something so that the long shutter speeds needed will not create a blurry image. And also try and choose a subject that's not moving quite so much so, again, that things aren't too blurred. But see how arty you can get, and we'll put the results back on the site in a week or so's time.
Okay, so load up the shutter speed and don't take pictures of Jedward. Got it.
And also up the ISO. Yeah, go into settings and up the ISO speed, which effectively means you have a shorter shutter speed and you accept the fact there's going to be a bit more digital noise on the photograph. But I think that won't be a problem in a stage setting where you're looking for arty, you're looking for atmosphere. So go to it, really.
This is probably going to go horribly wrong. You realise that, don't you?
Oh, never mind. We want to get some content out of the Eurovision Song Contest to bring back a flavour of where you've been and what you've been up to onto the Windows Phone site. So I'll leave that with you. And until then, we hope you have a great rest of the day and rest of the week. And thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Lovely. Nice, guys. Speak to you soon.
Bye. Now we have Eurovision's toddled off into the distance. Ewan's popped off. We'll catch him hopefully next week if we can catch him again in the press room. Quite a few news stories to get through. We better rattle through these guys. Rafe, the Daily Beast. What the heck is the Daily Beast and why is it on Windows Phone?
Well, the Daily Beast is an app that's been launched this week. It was actually mentioned by Nokia at CKIA as one of kind of the upcoming apps, and it's kind of a big brand name. The Daily Beast is a US news website. It's actually associated with Newsweek, sort of the weekly news roundup magazine. In fact, those two companies merged a while back. And the Daily Beast, if you like, is the website version of Newsweek, but also a short form version of it in content. You know, the idea is to have easy to access content. It's a very strong on kind of the visual elements of typography and imaging. And as you might suspect, that translates pretty well to the Metro user interface that Windows Phone uses. And so this is a way to get all the content that's on the Daily Beast website. One of the things that the Daily Beast is best known for is the cheat sheet, which is kind of a roundup of news from various sources, including Newsweek and their own coverage, but also other sites, to give you a flavour of what's going on in the world in as short a time as possible. I mean, they talk about 5 minutes. It's a big deal because the Daily Beast is a pretty well-known brand in the US. Outside the US, obviously, it's less well-known, but this kind of ties in with the big Lumia 900 launch in the States. And it's kind of an example of how Nokia is helping to do developer promotion that's getting some of these big names on board, which is something people have talked about missing from Windows Phone. So that's why it was worth highlighting. Before I hand back to you, I should probably just say, I'm not sure everyone's going to know what Eurovision is. So perhaps for the benefit of our American listeners who do know what the Daily Beast is, but don't know what Eurovision is, and I know you'll be shocked to realise there are people who doesn't know what Eurovision is. It's kind of the European Song Contest where everybody gets together, sings songs, and you vote for it all around Europe. And it is somewhat strange, but it's a traditional European thing. And if you want to tune in, I believe the final's in about a week's time.
It's a way we can express our hatred for our geographical neighbours without actually causing a war, basically. Moving on with applications. David, maybe you can take this one. Time magazine, now available on Windows Phone 7. What's actually included? Is it any good?
Well, there's the latest popular stories from the Time magazine website, plus a lot of galleries. There's a lot of high-quality photojournalism done in Time magazine. There's also certain video features, and there is live tile support, so you get push notifications and latest stories are floating up on your start screen. Really, but that's about it, although it's all very well presented in the Metro UI. It all fits perfectly, as I think really that format fits a lot of news applications. So so that's really all there is to say about it. It's good to have here.
Yeah, that's right, David. I think it falls into the same category as the Daily Beast we were just talking about. These news applications seem particularly well suited to Metro UI, and obviously getting more of these on board is going to be good for Windows Phone. And Time magazine, I think, is the biggest selling weekly magazine in the world. So obviously it's one of those big brands. Other apps that already exist, like this, there's The Guardian in the UK, and there's various ones in European countries I know as well. It's something that Nokia has sort of been pushing to get more of these on board, as has Microsoft as well. But the Metro UI does seem particularly well suited to consuming content in this way. And obviously you can have mobile websites for these apps, but often a lot of the time it's quicker using these apps rather than the websites, simply because they're kind of optimized for the device itself. rather than being a bit more generic. And there's a feeling of coherency, if you like, by using the same kind of panoramas, the pivots, and the toolbars and the sharing features. That I think that uniformity of experience is very welcome.
Okay. Now, this is a news item that's particularly interesting because it's built into Windows Phone, yet not quite. If you create a new account in settings in Windows Phone 7, one of the options is LinkedIn, and you can put in your LinkedIn details, the big contact social network, and it will bring up the basics of LinkedIn actually within your People Hub, but there hasn't been a dedicated application that you can add on to all the extra power user stuff. Rafe, I gather we can that hole has now been filled. We can now do LinkedIn fully on Windows Phone.
That's right. This is an official application. I suppose you could compare it to the official Facebook application in the way that's also in the People Hub. Of course, in the People Hub, you kind of get the status updates and you can update your status obviously as well. And then you get the contact information sort of all synced in and merged into the one list in People Hub. But this gives you access to all the other LinkedIn functionality. So if anyone's kind of a power user of LinkedIn, this is a must-have application, or even, I'd say, the casual user. It's also been beautifully implemented, again, using kind of the Metro UI, the panorama, to give what I think is the best mobile LinkedIn experience. I mean, there are apps available for the iPhone and the iPad, Android as well, but I would say this is the most feature rich that I've seen. It's just the little things. Okay, you've got the LinkedIn update, so you don't get them mixed in with anything else. That's great. But then you can link into the profile pages of the people posting the updates and get kind of all the information from them. You know, you get the photos, the kind of summary information, but you can then dive down and see their experience, recommendations, kind of that other information that's available in the LinkedIn profile. You can send them a message using this kind of LinkedIn messaging service, and that's obviously part of this app as well. Integrated within to that is the LinkedIn kind of invite system, when you invite someone to connect with you, so you then become the equivalent of friending, I guess, on a consumer social network, but obviously LinkedIn is really around business. And that's reflected in the kind of the other bits of the app. You get groups, which is effectively a forum-like way of exchanging messages in a public way. You post a notice and then people can reply to it, can comment on it. The two kind of features that caught my eye were the jobs listings and the companies listings, and they're available on the LinkedIn website, but I think companies in particular is the first time I've seen it on a mobile device that lets you follow the activities of a particular company and things coming and going from them. Obviously jobs is the job listings from LinkedIn that's based on your profile. You'll get recommendations, and it's both stuff listed on the LinkedIn website, but also third-party services. You know, there are various bits that tie into the live tiles as well. For example, there's support for LinkedIn Today, which is the kind of curated news service that LinkedIn, you know, gathers based on the status updates. It sort of uses some clever curation algorithms to generate effectively a newspaper for each kind of industry area, and you can read those stories, have it pinned to your home screen. So all in all, a very impressive application. As I said, the People Hub does list LinkedIn contacts. You've obviously got a way to search your LinkedIn contacts, and depending on how you've got your filters set up in the People Hub, you may or may not be seeing all of your LinkedIn contacts. And this is a way of getting extra information at a glance, and it's most things are just a few taps away, so really rather impressive.
Yeah, and there is actually even a Symbian application for LinkedIn. LinkedIn is still a social network I'm trying to figure out, and like, given that I'm a professional writer now, I really feel I need to. And I do agree that this one is the best experience that I've come across on all the different platforms. The thing that gets me about this, and it's the same with Twitter and Facebook, is that we have the People Hub, which is supposed to be bringing all of the social networks in together into a cohesive user experience in Metro UI and merging it in with your address book. But to get the extra features of each respective network, you have to break out and go into these applications, and that it just keeps breaking the user experience for me. I think if the People Hub is, if there is a hard line where the People Hub is not going to have these features so that it's worth the while of the social networks to provide their own application that they have control of, I can understand that. At least let's have a bit of a panorama in the People Hub that links to all these in the same way that we have for pictures and music.
Yeah, I think you're right there, David. It's going to be difficult, obviously, to integrate every one of these applications into the People Hub. And I'm not sure you'd want to, actually, because there's a lot to be said for having a simplified experience around the common sets you get from social networks, which is really about, you know, your contacts, your friends, plus status updates. You know, going into the more integral or unique features of each social network gets more difficult, and designing an application that works well there. But I do agree, something like you have in the Music Hub, you kind of have related applications, the same in Photos, so that when you're in a contact, and it will obviously know when it's linked in to a particular social network, it does that if you look at the link button on in the People Hub, would make a lot of sense. So that's something I'd hope would see in Windows Phone 8. And then enough intelligence, obviously, in these third-party or these official applications that you can maybe deep link into them from the People Hub itself. It just seems like that would be the sensible joined-up thing to do. What I wouldn't want to see is what some people have advocated, and get all of the social network functionality sitting in the People Hub. I think there's a lot to be said for keeping it relatively clean and sort of the common denominators on the social network. But yes, I would definitely add a voice to David's opinion there.
Okay. Now, moving on to SkyTunes and SkyDrive and all things cloud, which is very much the topic of the year, topic of the day, I was intrigued by a little utility called SkyTunes. Basically, most of us have now got 25 gigabytes of SkyDrive storage, thanks to Microsoft. And what are you going to do with all that space? Well, one option, of course, is to mimic things like iTunes, Match, and Google Music, and basically have your music collection in the cloud, so that if you've got a Windows phone with limited storage, right, and say 4 gigabytes in the case of some of the budget phones, certainly 16 gigabytes in the case of my Lumia 800, you've got limited space on the phone, so I know what you have, your music actually in the cloud, and you play it directly from the cloud, directly from SkyDrive, and that's what SkyTunes aims to do. But great idea. Flawed implementation. Actually, uploading music to SkyTunes is a real pain. You can't upload nested hierarchical groups of folders in one go, as far as I can see. I had to do it folder by folder, file by file, which is a bit of a pain. Also, that there are real problems in terms of buffering. It takes up to 10 seconds before each track starts playing. So if you're going from one song to the next, you have to have 10 seconds of silence. There really needs to be some intelligent buffering and downloading in the background to smooth out the user experience. Also, there's no now playing shortcuts. So once the track's playing and you go browsing the music, or you do something else on the phone, you can't then get back the current track or artwork. You have to kind of go back to the through the directory again and play from the file list. There's also no album artwork. So given that it's a cloud utility, there's ample sources online for the software to grab the album art for the music you're playing. I don't see why it doesn't do it. So a great start, version one, if you like, for SkyTunes. Go and grab it from the Windows Phone Marketplace and watch out for updates, because if this is updated, then it will really give you a very valid solution for playing music from a source which just doesn't cost you any resource impact on your device at all. Rafe, I mean, we've got iTunes, Match, and Google Music, and numerous streaming music services. Is there anything sort of more professional here that could step in to help out with that SkyDrive storage and music?
Yes, there are a couple of options, including obviously SkyTunes that you've mentioned. These are from a third party. There's Cloud Music is one of them, and Sky Music. Those are sort of two third party apps that allow you to play music from your SkyDrive. Of course, you might also qualify some of the applications like Spotify, where you can actually specify the music that you're playing, so you can set up playlists and have exactly what music you want. And obviously, there is a premium subscription involved there. There are also a couple of apps that will connect back to your computer and play music that's sitting on your computer. So that's kind of a quasi-cloud service, if you will. But there isn't sort of anything big and official in the same way that you've got the Google Music Cloud or something like Apple's iCloud. I suspect we're going to see a renewal of the Zune Music Service from Microsoft in due course. There haven't been any official announcements, but the kind of the Zune brand is starting to go away. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if with the next version of Windows in general, and also Windows Phone, we see some kind of hybrid service come along that may well include some cloud component that lets you have your music stored remotely and will just stream it onto the device as you like. Quite what form that will take, we'll have to wait and see, but clearly this is something that's going to be quite an important one, because storing music on your device when you've got a limited amount of room, if you've got a good connection, why do it? I think everyone's going to keep some music on their device, because there'll always be a period when you haven't got a good connection. In some markets, it's going to be a lot worse than others. Just hearing from you in there about how he's on an edge connection and probably streaming music would be a bit difficult there, and also data caps and all that kind of thing. But some kind of hybrid solution, yes, I think so. So watch this space, really.
Yes, and Rafa is just saying what I was thinking about data caps and connectivity. And, of course, the other thing to go along with that is that you need to have a battery life to back up streaming audio a lot as well. The other thing I wanted to pick up on, which I'm sort of preempting some commenters here, is that I have been able to upload subfolders to SkyDrive without a problem. I've been stress testing SkyDrive a lot lately. But one limitation I've really hit is, I'll ask you, Steve, how much you were uploading, because I found that if you upload an excessive amount of subfolders and files, sort of something to the order of 10,000 files, the SkyDrive desktop sync application just seems unable to keep up syncing things. But maybe if I'm currently at around 2,000 or 3,000 files and it's still working fine. So
that would have been fine enough for me. I think the problem was that I'm using a Mac, which is not necessarily guaranteed to work with Microsoft branded solutions. Also, I was doing it using the SkyDrive web interface, where it claims you can just drag and drop files and folders. So I did it, and it didn't work. But I'm sure if you use a proper SkyDrive client application on Windows, then you'll have no problems. So I think I'm probably making a mountain out of a molehill there. But the other limitations of SkyTunes as a utility do, of course, apply, plus all Rafe's caveats that he just mentioned. Staying with the Sky theme, now you wanted to talk about, David, about SkyDrive URL shortening. Now, what on earth do you mean there? Why would someone want to shorten a SkyDrive URL?
Well, because a lot of the time we're using social networks, particularly Twitter, that have a character limitation, and the ordinary SkyDrive sharing links are humongous. So having a short URL is very handy.
How do they do it?
Well, how they do it is through Bitly, I'm presuming we're all familiar with Bitly. Now, I will just say, them having this isn't news in and of itself, because they started doing this for specifically sharing from the web to Twitter. They had this a while ago, and it's sdrv.ms is the domain. However, they've now partnered with Bitly, and this is now the default link. Sharing link format. So no more will you see these horrible long URLs, unless you are sharing from the SkyDrive application on a Windows Phone device. But the great thing about it being powered by Bitly is that you get all the benefits of Bitly Analytics. So, example, if you have a short SkyDrive URL and you put a plus at the end, you can see a page full of analytics about how many times the link has been clicked and etc. And if you put plus QR code at the end of the URL, you will get a QR code that can be scanned, which works very nicely in Bing Vision. So you can now optically share SkyDrive files.
So just to be clear, you're actually in SkyDrive, say in the web interface, and you've got a resource there, a photo you've uploaded you want to share with the world. How do you actually get that Bitly link?
You would have to click on the checkbox next to the file, and then on the right-hand side, there is a link to share, and then you get a dialog box up with options of all the social networks that are linked to your account, and you just select where you want to share and type in any comment you want. And I will also add in that it now also, this is one bit of new news, is that it supports Facebook Open Graph. So if you want to share these links on Facebook, it will actually give you a nice preview of the file in the Facebook timeline.
And it's also relevant here, because when you're uploading a photo via the built-in sort of social networking status in the Me tile, I believe these links will actually be used, because it'll upload an image to your SkyDrive and then use the short link form to post onto Facebook, Twitter, or wherever else it's getting posted.
I'll have to test that.
So that was me thinking Microsoft's engineers had written their own URL shortener. Basically, they've licensed Bitly, which is fair enough, I suppose. Now, applications, plural, 90,000 of them. Rafe has been doing the counting. He's been adding them up on his abacus. So you posted the story on this, Rafe. I'm not a big fan, as you know, of just going by pure number stats and app stores. They don't really tell the story down at ground level where people are looking for mainstream applications. But it's still a pretty big number, and I guess it's not too long till we hit the magic 100,000.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I actually thought twice about posting this simply because, the numbers, it's pretty irrelevant in some ways. But of course, it's still something that gets posted in all the big press releases whenever people are talking about the platforms and the availability of apps on Windows Phone. It tends to get talked about, you know, Windows Phone not having enough. And I think, you know, once you get to the 100,000 point, it's not really about having enough applications, it's about having the right applications. And the honest truth is, it's always been about that. Nonetheless, I think it's worth sharing this kind of data, and we collect it using our app tracking service. Just to give a few highlights, I guess it's taken about 35 days to go from 80,000 to 90,000, so you can see there's a pretty encouraging growth rate. That's a slight dip from earlier in the year, at least from January, when it was going up fast. But I think at least some of this can be explained by the fact there's a bit of a bottleneck at the moment in apps going through the App Hub, which is how they get published to Marketplace. I suspect we may see a bit more of this, given that we've got the reduced spec Windows Phone 7.5 devices coming out, like the 610, which may mean existing apps require tweaking. So we may see more updates and less new apps from some developers. And of course, Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, etc. is coming along, and so we may see some, you know, activity change as a result of that. Nonetheless, I still expect the 100,000 level to be reached sometime in June. It should be about a month's time from now, I reckon. Other little bits of interesting information: China's actually been one of the fastest growing markets. It's increased by almost 10,000 applications in the last month. It's only got 29,000 altogether, but of course there's kind of language issues and developers having to get special requirements to go into that particular marketplace. But I think it's a pretty encouraging sign of Nokia and Microsoft having done a good job in engaging with developers, particularly in that market, but also existing developers to get into that market. And it does seem to back up some other signals we're seeing about China being quite a strong market thus far for Windows Phone. So that one's worth keeping an eye on. Also, kind of repeating what we had in our last report on this app marketplace situation, there's an increasing number of apps that are just being published to one or a couple of marketplaces. In other words, there's more local apps coming along, and that might be local because there's of language variants, or because it's only locally relevant in one market. In some cases, you should argue that the app should just get published everywhere anyway, but that might not always apply. I mean, there are some which are very local, which it makes no sense whatsoever to publish elsewhere. But I kind of thought that was an interesting trend, and I think that's very much the influence of Nokia, which has a global reach beyond that of Microsoft. And of course, it's also about the fact there's now more marketplaces. We've sort of almost doubled them in the first 6 months or so of this year. One other thing that I wanted to mention is, you were saying there it's really about quality. I absolutely agree. That's why we kind of have this extra metric that you can see in the report. It's all available on the website about how many apps have been rated five or more times. And we use this metric as a kind of an analog for quality, because basically if an app's no good, it's unlikely to be rated and certainly won't be rated five or more times. Because if it's a spam app, people will just ignore it. And if it's really bad, people tend to ignore it as well. And in terms of the kind of proportion of apps that have this 5+ rating, it's holding steady at about 8%. I've done a little bit of investigation of other app stores, iOS and Android, and I'd suggest that the figures here are, you know, Windows Phone is somewhere between the two of those, with Apple having a slightly higher percentage of applications. I think that's also because they have very good engagement in terms of getting people to rate and review things, and Android's significantly below that, where the opposite is true. Kind of getting engagement on some of the reviews can be more difficult. Those are, you know, quite woolly figures because the data sets available are limited. But actually, it kind of does tie in with some of the other things that we've seen around growth stats as well. So yes, we'll be keeping a close eye on this, and of course, we'll let people know when the 100,000 figure is reached. I should just add that when we talk about these apps, we're talking about unique apps as defined by the app ID that Microsoft provides for every application. And we are tracking about 40+ marketplaces now. And so it's not what's just available in one marketplace. In the US, for example, there's about 77,000 active applications. There are some 10,000 plus applications that have been removed, unpublished, either by Microsoft or the developer. And so these numbers are bigger than some of the ones you'll see elsewhere. And that's, as I say, because we are tracking multiple marketplaces and they are definitely unique because it's done by the app ID.
Okay. We're now going to play a game. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, listeners, now I'm going to mention three things. You've got to spot which of these things is real. First of all, we have AAWP.com. Is that our new URL? I've just had a look at AAWP.com. Rafe, there's lots of pretty women. That's not right, is it? Now, number two, all about Windows Phone, application in the Windows Phone Marketplace. That's got to be the right app. Nope, that's not. That's somebody else. That's a bogus app. The right one, AAWP, as it sounds in the Windows Phone Marketplace, it's not only real, it's updated. Any comments on all that, Rafe?
Yes, I guess I should talk about this. The app has been updated. I'll get to that in a minute. The reason it's not called All About Windows Phone in the marketplace is because we weren't allowed to do that for using Windows Phone. It's a legal thing. And so when we tried it first time around, it was turned down. Obviously, someone else has put in the same app name and has managed to get away with it. So it does make you wonder a little bit about some of the quality control going in the submission process. The other advantage of using AAWP is it's actually a shorter name, and so it does fit into the app launcher as well. And so there were secondary benefits for using that, and we do try and have the dual brand, All About Windows Phone and AAWP. I mean, this is the AAWP Insight podcast, for example.
But not AAWP.com. Just don't go there.
Don't go there. I wasn't able to get my hands on that particular domain. The naming goes back, of course, to All About Symbian, and we wanted to maintain the All About brand. I could probably talk a little bit about that, but it won't be of interest to most listeners. But what I think will be is the fact there's now an updated version of the application, which you can find by taping AAWP into the marketplace, or if you've already downloaded it, you should receive an automatic notification about the update. And I'd certainly encourage you to do so, because in this new update, version 1.1, we've introduced the much requested dark theme, and they will actually follow the theme. Yeah, Steve was a big proponent of this. It didn't quite make it into version 1, but I'm glad it's in 1.1. It will follow the default theme on your phone. So if you've got a dark background, it will use the dark theme. If you're using the light background, it will use the light theme. If you want to actually manually override that, there's an option in settings to do so. The other sort of new features, we've improved the comment integration. There's removal of some extra HTML tags, so it should be easier to read. And also replies will actually be indented in those little blue lines, so it should be a bit easier to follow a conversation in the comments. There's also a few cosmetic changes, just to tidy a few things up. And there's also some performance improvements. There's some changes to the underlying code and some cleanup for the image cache, for example. So overall performance should be better. It should take less space on your device as well. So yes, download that and try it out. We'd love to hear your feedback. I'd love to hear what you'd like to see in the next version, and version 1.2 is currently under development.
Rafe, when we say that the dark theme in our application was the most requested feature, are we actually saying that there was lots of people asking for it, or that it was just Steve asking for it lots and lots of times?
Well, Steve could have been, of course, creating sock puppets and asking lots of times, but I did have several humans ask me as well, and certainly it was mentioned in quite a few of the app reviews, and it's been mentioned in quite a few tweets after releasing the application, so I don't think it was just down to Steve. And there are, of course, very good reasons to have this. It's more consistent when you're using your phone, and also on the AMOLED screen devices, it's more power efficient using a dark background, so we're happy to meet our reader demands. I will say that I've actually set my menu to be white because that's how I like it, but you're free to use it however you wish.
And I like mine dark, so I'm going to keep mine dark. Thank you very much. Now, we're running a bit short of time. We've got some news items. Can we just bang these out very quickly, guys? 30 seconds each. David, next-gen reader, version 3.
Okay, there's been lots and lots of changes in this. General all-around performance and efficiency improvements. And there are now static live tiles for all items and starred items. Now we'll play YouTube videos in the article view. It supports fav icons if you've enabled that in your Google Reader account. And the biggest visual change is that it has an expanded and indented list of feeds within folders. And as ever, NextGen Reader has a fantastic startup tutorial.
Okay, my turn. Samsung has announced the Omnia M for Europe. Good to see Samsung still in the Windows Phone game. We had the Focus Flash 2. think we mentioned that last week. Now they've got a Windows phone for Europe. It's slightly cut down, more of a budget Windows phone. It's got, although it's got a nice 4-inch Super AMOLED screen, which I guess is the highlight, 1 GHz processor, only got 384 megabytes of RAM rather than the usual 512, which is a bit disappointing. I guess they're expecting the users who use this not to be terribly adventurous in terms of wanting to do too much fast app switching. Only 4 GB of internal storage, again pointing to a real novice user who's not going to load on too much in the way of media and applications, but still looks very good. We'll obviously try and get one in for review as and when. In the meantime, yes, look out for that. Before taxes and subsidies, the price is estimated at under €200, so it's probably on pay-as-you-go for about £100 or so.
Yes, Steve, this is an interesting device. As you say, it's kind of mid-tier. Those specifications are sort of halfway between the first generation devices and the kind of the reduced specification devices like the ZT Tanya or the Lumia 610. And I suspect it will be competing with those in terms of its price point and kind of its positioning in the market. I kind of get the feeling that this is something Samsung had in their back pocket, and as a result of an operator request, it's sort of going to get released. So it'll be interesting to see how wide a distribution this one gets. But obviously, it's encouraging to see Samsung continuing to release these devices. In some ways, this is the European equivalent of the Flash 2 that got released in the States last week, kind of at the bottom end of the Windows Phone device portfolio for operators. Just a couple of things did catch my eye that I think are worth mentioning here. Hopefully we'll be able to do more on this when we actually get our hands on the device. It's Samsung's Family Story and Chat On. The first of those is kind of a cloud-based service for sharing videos and photos. And it's something you get on Samsung TVs and also other Samsung mobile devices. And similarly, Chat On is a kind of a communication and messaging service, kind of the Samsung clone of BlackBerry Messenger, if you will, and other IM services. And again, it's available across Samsung's kind of device consumer electronics portfolio. And so seeing them put a bit of time in to get that ported onto Windows Phone is interesting. I would imagine it will become available for the other Samsung Windows Phone devices. As you say, the 4 GB of mass memory is the kind of the fly in the ointment for me on this device, because it is quite a significant limitation. And so it will possibly limit the appeal of this device. Maybe it's about designing to a certain price point, and so they've had to cut a few things out. But I wouldn't have thought the price of going from 4 to 8 GB would be that prohibitive. You know, it seems maybe a cut too far. But as you sort of said, hopefully we will get our hands on this in due course, and we'll do a few full review on the site.
Okay, one last thing. I was a bit ambitious there, trying to get a new device launched into 30 seconds. We'll keep this one short, though. Nokia Reading apparently is rolling out, but I can't see it on my device even 3 or 4 days later. How long do we think this will take, and what does Nokia Reading do, Rafe?
Yes, that's right, Steve. I haven't seen it either. I would imagine it'll be out within the next week. It should happen with the Lumia 900 launch going on. It's going to be available in select European countries, and it's basically an ebook reading service and application. You can go and buy ebooks and then read them on your device. So you could say it's similar to something like the Nook or the Kindle or the Kobo here in Europe, in that it's trying to provide a seamless reading experience. In this first version, it's just going to be about ebooks. In subsequent updates, it is going to get something called NewsStream, kind of a news flow coming in, as well as support for audiobooks and some other content as well. But we'll talk about this more once we've actually been able to use it on our own devices. I did see it at MWC, and I think this is a really interesting way for Nokia to stand out, you know, differentiate their devices. But I actually want to try it out and do some reading in anger before I talk about it too much more.
Lovely. Okay. I just wanted to finish off the podcast just to mention that we are continuing our reviews of the Lumia 800 and the 900, the 800 in particular. Now that we've got all the hardware and the cameras stuff out of the way, David's been faithfully going through all the different applications, all the different functions and features, looking at these potential showstoppers and all the things you can do as well. David, what's next up coming from you on Lumia 800 and Windows Phone 7?
The next part of the Lumia 800 review is part 5, and I'm looking at the web services that Microsoft offers to all Windows Phone devices, which are things like Find My Phone. If you've lost it, you can locate it on a map as long as it has a data connection. And you can remotely lock and erase a phone. And I also went in depth and looked at the Bing search function, all things you can do, like product scanning, which is barcodes and cover art, QR code scanning, text scanning, which includes translating foreign languages, and the music identification service. All brilliant things to have bundled into the operating system, and it makes a lot of third-party things redundant.
So we're very proud of David's work on these review parts. So do mention them to your family, friends, and colleagues if they're looking for information on exactly how the different parts of Windows Phone fit together, all the different applications, all the functions you can do. Then I can recommend no higher resource than having a look at David's Lumia 800 review parts, and we'll be linking back to them, or probably copying and pasting liberally in our review of the Lumia 900 coming up very shortly. We've done the initial hardware and impressions of the 900, done the camera in the last week, so look at allaboutwindowsphone.com for my assessment of the camera with some sample photographs and sample video. And, of course, our general impressions as the weeks roll on. Rafe, you've had the 900 now in several different forms for several weeks. I've only had it for 1 week. My impressions are that I don't quite like it as much as the 800. Yes, the 900 can do more, but it seems more... like a faceless, loveless slab. It's very, very functional, but there's not much to love about it. Whereas the 800, I pick it up and I want to caress it. Do you find the same experience?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, the extra bits on the Lumia 900 just aren't enough to make it stand out in my heart, especially with the knowledge that some of those updates are going to come along and arrive on the 800. And it's really down to sort of a subjective preference for the size of the screen, and I just find the 800 fits into the hand a lot better. I will say that the 900 does do some things very well, and particularly for media consumption. The fact that it's got what I'd call a really good screen on it, both in terms of bigger size, but also it's not a pentile display, it's a sort of full AMOLED display, means that, you know, when you're playing back video or even doing things like reading from the web on it, it feels just a little bit better than the 800. It's a bit easier on the eyes. And so if you're going to be doing a lot of media consumption of whatever kind, the 900 might be a better choice, particularly if you've got big enough hands that kind of the size isn't an issue. And, you know, there are a few extra bits, as I say, there's the front-facing camera. But I think some of the caressability, as you mentioned there, comes from the fact there's actually kind of a bevel, a slightly raised edge around the edge of the 900 screen, and so it doesn't feel quite as smooth and slick as the 800. It feels like a more masculine device, and I guess that goes along with it, you know, being actual physically bigger. And, you know, I've talked to some people who take exactly the opposite view, and they prefer the 900. So I would say that if you're looking at a choice between the 800 and 900, it's probably worth going into a shop and going, you know, trying both of them in your hand, having a look at them. In terms of the software and the sort of features, they are very similar, but it's really for me around media consumption versus the kind of the subjectiveness of size of the device.
Yeah. So we'll have the next review part of the Lumia 900 up on the site, hopefully middle of next week as you listen to this. I also have my video review of 900 up on the phone show, plugplugstevelitchfield.com. And then that's out the way. We can get on with other business, i.e. signing off. We were way, way long on this podcast. But thank you very much to my co-hosts, Ewan Spence, who's now sadly departed for the perils of interviewing Jedward, believe it or not. We also have David Gilson. Goodbye from you.
Thank you, Stephen. It's great to be here, and talk to everybody next week.
Any last words from Rafe Blandford?
Well, just to say goodbye to everybody. We'll have our app picks next week, but go and have a look at some of the apps we mentioned earlier on if you need some apps to fix you this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Goodbye for now. Catch you next time.